built smart, move fast, get the edge of last. This is the Catalyst.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Catalyst, the podcast from the Long Beach Area Chamber of Commerce. My name is Stuart Takahara. Thank you for being here. We are excited to have you here. We have so many great things that's going to be happening in this podcast. Today, we're talking about talent, recruitment, retention, and employee lifestyle. And with us today, I'd like to first introduce Kirsten Stromberg from Venture. Kirsten, sorry about that. Good morning and welcome to The Catalyst.
Yeah, good morning, all. Happy to be here. Thanks for having us, Stuart. We're excited to be here presenting with the Long Beach Chamber of Commerce on a very hot topic, which is talent. I am Kirsten Stromberg. I am the regional sales manager for one of our Southern California teams here in Venture. My team covers Long Beach and Orange County and the surrounding area here for small to medium-sized businesses in the U.S. and abroad. Venture, we've been around since 2004. We are one of the largest privately held HR and technology companies. We operate globally in over 80 countries. We process over $58 billion in payroll, and we're excited to get to know more of the businesses here in Long Beach and beyond. Myself, I have been in this industry and the surrounding industry since 2004, also working with small to mid-sized businesses throughout California. So really excited to be here. And with us, we have our Chief Talent Officer, Walter Sabrin.
Thank you, Kirsten. Stuart, thank you. Both you guys, thanks for having me today. I am the Chief Talent Officer at Venture. I basically handle all things hiring, recruiting, retention, everything to do with human capital. The one thing, Kirsten, that I think you left out about Venture that may be interesting to our to the people listening and watching is 7.5 short years ago, Venture only had 120 employees. So if you're out there and you're looking to grow your business, scale your business, we went from 120 employees to over 45,000 employees in literally 7.5 years. So, Stuart, I used to have hair when I first started here, and that just went out the window. So it's a pleasure to be here.
That is, I normally have something good to say to be able to, like, but yeah, you kind of stumped me with that one. But Walter, thank you for being here. So as we talked about, we're talking about recruitment, retention, and the employee lifestyle, how to build a magnetic employer brand. And I absolutely love that word magnetic, because nowadays companies are choosing candidates and candidates are choosing companies where to work for just almost in the same level. You know, the talent pool can get kind of rough sometimes, and where I want to go work for has to be a good fit for me, and the company has got to have that same kind of alignment, right? And morals and values and visions and work and all that. So let's talk about what it looks like to build a magnetic employer brand. What does that mean to you?
Yes, Stuart, you bring up a good point. The playing field has been leveled to a large extent between employer and employees. And it is really important to ensure that you are that employer of choice and you're doing all of the right things to attract and retain top talent. Walter, take it away.
Yeah. Wow. Guys, where do we start? You know, where do we start talking about, you know, before you decide on what kind of talent you want to attract, you need to decide what kind of culture, what is your brand? What does it stand for? You know, to me, it's all about consistency. The companies that are winning today are not the ones shouting the loudest or who have the biggest marketing budgets. They're the ones who are acting most consistently. Because when you're consistent, you know, people, they start to trust you before they even meet you. And that's not done from a marketing department. That's done from the CEO that filters down to leadership, that filters down into the people doing the interviews, the hiring managers. I just think it's vital these days because, Stuart, you know, you're right. a lot of the leverage, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID, we can argue who, you know, who needs more than who at which time and everything. But it definitely is the candidates, the talent that you're seeking are definitely, well, they're checking out the other guy. They're doing more due diligence today than ever before.
You know, it reminds me of a question that a lot of people ask in interviews. You guys probably have gotten this one or have even asked this one. Why do you want to work here? You know, that's a question that is a standard of a lot of job interviews. But I think nowadays it also kind of be flipped on the other side. Why should I work there? Why should I work for you? What is it that you're going to give me that I can't get at a different company?
I mean, yeah. So, you know, to me, what I'm hearing more than I'm hearing it more than money. It's not just about salary and bonuses and even the best benefits. Okay. As much these days, it's about growth. It's, and you know, it's not even considered about like in the old days, climbing the corporate ladder. It's not like that is necessarily, but people today, yeah, why should I work here? They want to hear that the company is investing in them and their future. That I'm not going to be replaced by AI. I'm actually going to train you so you work in conjunction with AI and you become even more valuable no matter where you are in the world. It's that kind of, and to me, that is part of your brand. That's part of, you know, your culture. The fact that your company is taking the time to invest money into my career, well, now it's sounding like a better two-way street.
Kirsten, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I concur on all points. And culture is so much more important than it used to be. And we all have so much access to information with LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram. And companies, or rather candidates, are really doing due diligence to ensure it's a fit on a lot of different levels that supersede pay, to Walter's point.
Yes, for those of you that... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but... You know, people would say the old expression, you know, people don't quit on companies, they quit on their managers. You know, to me, people today are quitting on environments that make them feel small. And there's things that have come out into the stratosphere, you know, like respect, autonomy, and psychological safety. I mean, these are things that they were there maybe back, you know, a couple of years or a couple of decades ago, but they were never really discussed. And now it is coming out in the interview process. It's coming out on both sides. The company and the candidates are bringing it up.
So when it comes to building a magnetic employer brand, assuming that someone says, oh my gosh, we need to do this, what's the first step that a person inside of a company needs to make to be able to start doing a lot of the stuff that you talked about? When you go, we're not like that. We need to be. We're losing candidates. We're losing great people. Or we can't attract great people because of this. They're leaving because of this or that. We're paying good. We have a good brand. We have a good product, but people don't want to stay with us. They don't want to come to us. What's the first step a company needs to take to be able to start developing that magnetic employer brand?
Sure. Kirsten, you want to go, or because
I have so many thoughts. That's such a good question, Stuart. And number one is the fact that you need to be self-aware as an employer and have the data and insight to understand and the care about being this magnetic employer and understanding why people are moving away from your company, because the cost of turnover, that's a whole nother topic, but mm-hmm. that is a real, real, real cost. And I'm thinking from my vantage point and to Walter's point earlier, it really starts with I'm the one interviewing frontline leaders. So what is their experience with me and also with the recruitment team? That speaks volumes, the way that we're moving people through that process and really having that alignment and the ability for myself and our recruitment team to articulate who we are and who we want to be as a company. Walter, give us some more thoughts on that.
Yeah, very, very well said, Kirsten. These days, everyone's making a widget. They're selling a widget. You know, they're servicing a widget. To me, the first thing is, how are you making yourself different in the widget business from all the other widget makers? So decide that. What is your differentiator? And then stay consistent with that message. And then to Kirsten's point, hire the best leaders. Make sure your leaders have the same message that you want filtered down, because that's where those frontline leaders, that's where it all begins. That's where the candidates are hearing it in the interview process. That's where they're working alongside, you know, once they go to work, you know, at your firm. And if you can keep that message, clear and consistent, you know, then, of course, it's a matter of executing, building the best widget. But now you have your culture, you'll have your segment of the population. So, you know, to me, that's a great place to start. And especially for small businesses, you know, sometimes you just want to throw it out there. Just throw it out there. Let's wing it. And as an entrepreneur, that is, you know, sometimes it's necessary even. Let's see what sticks. And then we build our message and our differentiator from there. I'm not saying you can never do that, but if you have a choice, you know, pick that message, stay consistent with it, and then execute it.
For those of you watching, if you have questions, there's a Q&A button that you can click. And if you have a question that you're going around, feel free to drop it in there and we'll get to those throughout the episode as well. So we know that. How do you do it? What do? You start by being self-aware, as Kirsten was saying. You got to understand that this is what I want to create. You have to know where you're at, honestly, in the business that you're at and where you want to go. Then you talked about developing frontline leaders. Getting that person out there and having that consistent message all the way through the organization, right? Is there a third step? Or let me rephrase that, because maybe we're going to go on, because I'm looking to move into this next step. So the next thing is, once you've already established your self-aware, you know where you want to go, you've got your frontline leader set up, everyone's excited. Next, you have to start onboarding. You start training your staff and making sure that that message doesn't get lost along that. So we're creating an onboarding plan that actually works. Why is that so important, an onboarding plan?
Well, the first 90 days are crucial in a new hire's experience. And that's really when they're going to decide, the data tells us this, that they are connected and this is a company that they want to stay with and grow with. And I would say right in between that, it's not just getting excited about a plan initially, but it's constant communication and alignment and dedication and consistency to the plan at hand and what we're trying to execute on. But onboarding is so crucial. Like I said, those first 90 days, a candidate is either sticking with you or they're already looking to leave. And you've made that investment in time, in money. So you need to make sure that now we have a plan that we can follow for those first 90, 100, those first 6 months. And Walter can speak a little bit more on that piece.
Yeah. You know what, Stuart and Kirsten, you know what the biggest problem with onboarding is? It's undervalued. Companies put their money in marketing. They put their money, they examine the interview. They have 17 different interviews. They take them out to dinner. They take them to the amusement park. They want to see the new candidate in all different situations. And then when they sign the offer letter, there's a collective sigh. And everyone's like, oh, we got him. We got her. She's coming on board. And it's almost, too often, it's considered job well done. We got our new hire, our new CFO, our new graphic designer, and the game's all it. Guys, it's just beginning.
That's right.
Kirsten mentioned the first 90 days, the first 3 months, they determine the next 3 years. Never get a, you know, I mean, there's all these corny expressions, never get a second chance at a first impression and, you know, and all that. But man, when that computer is not there for your new hire, you think they're going to go to their friends and say, wait a minute, you should check this place out. The onboarding process can be a phenomenal retention and recruiting tool. The cheapest recruiting tool out of everything to find top talent. You just hired someone. They're all bushy-tailed and excited and everything. And you are putting negative feelings in their head, preventing them from telling their friends, neighbors, former colleagues, you know, about Stuart, don't get me started. Okay. This is a sore subject. And this is when Kirsten and her team and my team, when we go into companies, four walls, when we go in consulting, when we are looking for holes in the game, because that's why we get hired typically, it's the onboarding process that is typically, not always, but typically number one in the needs improvement category. So that's why I get a little emotional. I apologize.
No, you said don't get you started, but I am going to get you started. Because this is important, right? So First 90 days, what should companies be doing? What have you seen that's like, oh my gosh, you said that this is an area where they need the most amount of work. So what do you look for? What have you seen? And what are you recommending that people need to do in these first 90 days?
Well, number one, it can't be a haphazard process. So we need to have a plan, clear communication, a strategy, and alignment for what it looks like. And it needs to be consistent. Again, we're going to say that word a lot for every candidate, where they feel like they matter. Someone knew that they were coming. They had their equipment on time. There was communication of the benefits if they need to sign up and get logged in for all the internal technology. So it's really having that strategy. And I can say, as a recent new hire to venture, it really warmed my heart and made me feel like I had made a really good decision versus giving me anxiety that first week of the onboarding process with venture. But Walter can get a little more into the weeds on that.
Yeah, Stuart, have you ever played tennis or golf
Yeah, yeah.
There's only one way to get good, and that's to develop some type of consistency.
Right.
The 10,000 hours, same thing in business. It's the same application. We were talking about the messaging, the brand. How do you want to develop the brand to the public, to people out there, potential consumers, clients? Well, how about we start in our own house? So let's get here's an example. Stuart, you want to hear what Venture's motto is?
Absolutely.
This is our message internally and externally. Two words, very simple. Violent execution. That's our motto. It's actually
say that one more time.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you're sitting down too. Our motto is violent execution. We violently execute to try to do anything and everything for our clients that will help them generate a better, more effective, more profitable business, something that'll affect their ROI in a positive manner. And we may not have everything built out yet, but we're gonna start. And here's what violent execution means from kind of like a software. It's a software term, but we're gonna start off by building a skateboard. We're just gonna get the skateboard out to the client, start there. Then at some point, we're going to turn that into a scooter, then into a bicycle, then to a motorcycle, then to an automobile, maybe a plane, an airplane one day. But we're not going to sit and wait around until everything is perfected, because that's just not the real world. The real world requires swift movement, and that's kind of, how we act. So when someone starts working at venture, they are told about violent execution if they weren't in the interview process, which they almost always are. But we start to explain that message. And, look, there's lots of soft skills. There's lots of things that you should be doing just as human beings, with, taking them out to lunch in the first week, for sure. But we hire with violent execution in mind. We keep that message clear and consistent, which, by the way, it takes away a percentage of the population, Stuart. Not everyone's a good fit for us. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We wish them the best. And maybe we can place them with some of our clients because they just may not have the right cultural fit, with us. So, again, I know it may be boring to come back to that consistency. No one gets excited about consistency, but boy, it's so effective in business.
Violent execution. I mean, maybe I've been watching too many, horror movies or police dramas or something like that, because it took me a while for my mind to shift to exactly what you're talking about. Because I went, whoa, wait a minute. And now I'm back with you,
Yeah.
And that's another thing, too. I know it wasn't part of this thing, but when we're talking about building a magnetic company brand and employer brand and doing onboarding, you talked about, taking out the new employer out to lunch in the first week. How do remote companies create a magnetic employer brand? How do remote companies create this kind of onboarding experience that you're talking about if you're not in that same office all the time?
Well, thankfully, we have the advantage of technology and things like this, where it's not always ideal, but guess what? We can have lunch together over Zoom. We can send a gift card to the employee and schedule just some time. So it's really just having that FaceTime and that human connection, which you absolutely can achieve in a remote environment. Yes, it's nice to get together and share oxygen, but I can tell you I've managed remote teams for the last 4 years, and there is a way to achieve it if we have a plan and a strategy in place and the company is supporting us behind the scenes from an infrastructure perspective and a cultural perspective and a communication perspective.
Walter? Yeah, well, great points. Well said. Stuart, this is something that I had to learn the hard way, because when I first came to venture 8 years ago, I was a very well-known recruiter. I had some success, but only in the United States. 100% in the 50 states, that was me. I had no international experience. And we acquired and then built from scratch, from no employees, we built a company that is 100% outside the United States. And what we do is we hire people who live in Colombia, Argentina, Peru, Kenya, and they work for U.S. companies, our clients. So it's 100% remote.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have had trials and tribulations. We've tested this. And here is how to successfully and effectively work with a remote employee compared to your employee who's sitting in your office right next to you. Stuart, treat them the same. If Sally in accounting is having a birthday, okay, and you're going to have a little get together from 12:30 to 1, little cupcakes or, maybe some Starbucks, do that for your folks who are in Argentina. Do the same. Mm-hmm. Same meetings. I mean, there's no different. There should be no difference in how you treat your remote, your in-office, employees. So the company we built is called Salvo Global. And again, Salvo hires accountants, marketing people, inside sales, client services, graphic designers, all different types of positions who work remotely for U.S. clients. it's very important for us to train our clients this principle. Treat them the same, and then you will have a loyal, long-standing employee who's really passionate about working for you.
There's so many different types of businesses. And if you guys who are watching want to put in the chat what kind of business you are. Are you a brick and mortar? Are you mom and pop? Are you service business? Are you, you know, are you online? Are you remote? So that way we can kind of tailor some of these questions towards you. If you just guys want to, or watching, put it in the chat, we can kind of focus on that. So that way we're making sure that you're getting content that you want. But you touched on a lot of stuff about the global workforce, about how you're bringing in people from just all around the world, different time zones, different cultures, different backgrounds, different, you know, work ethics. I'm sure there's that. And that's really where we're going on a lot of these remote companies. Your global pool, your talent pool is no longer just everyone that's in Long Beach or everyone that's within an hour drive or 30-minute commute. Then, you know, it's changing the entire way we look at talent, where we're getting it, how much we pay, everything. So as we prepare for the future of work, I think of the global talent pool, the remote workforce. I think of AI, automation. So let's start kind of getting into that a little bit. Where is the world now and where do you see it going in the next 2, 3, 5 years?
Well, it's only gotten smaller and smaller, and I foresee it will continue to get that way. People want to operate without borders, without parameters. And we facilitate that for a lot of businesses, giving them access to top talent with no liability at a fraction of the cost so they can move faster, as we all have to, or we're going to get left behind. And Walter, tell us more about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm going to say something, Stuart, that might be a little controversial, but
go for it. Guys, as if violent execution wasn't controversial enough, you know what? Let's do it.
Well, Stuart, one day we're going to invite you to one of our headquarters. We have two global headquarters in the United States, one outside of Atlanta and one in Chandler, Arizona. And we actually have a violent execution room. And we have, in this room, we have the skateboard, the scooter, all the way up to the motorcycle, a real motorcycle, and a real Indy 500 car that we sponsored. We have to invite you one day to come down there and check that room out. But I digress. Indeed sucks. I'm going to say it. ZipRecruiter, it's terrible. The online platforms at one time, yes, they worked. They were great. They attracted, you know, the right people. Right now, we're in a 96, 97% employment culture out there in the United States. If you are only focusing on Long Beach, maybe looking for a college graduate, which probably has like 1% unemployment, those folks are just not looking for your company's posting online. They're just not. So you're going to need someone who's either going to headhunt for you, like good old headhunting back in the day, or I loved your expression, Stuart, not everyone uses it, but why don't we find a different, sometimes better, talent pool? Let's grow the talent pool instead of just in our little corner of California. Look, if you could find someone around the block, fantastic, go for it. But if it's not working and you're complaining and frustrated that top talent's not coming in your door in droves, then open up the world. The world is so much bigger. And we've learned that because of the internet, you know, because of online, but because of companies like Salvo Global, which can hire for you, a graphic designer that you're looking for, that you're having trouble finding in Long Beach, not only will you have a much larger pool of excited, passionate, college-educated folks, it's about two-thirds less expensive. So you're saving on the wages. On top of that, But I'm talking even from a non-monetary position. I mean, let's open up, let's expand our horizons to just try and find the best value.
There was a job I had, and I won't say the company name, but they, you know, they had a very strict in-office policy. You had to be in the office at your desk for specific numbers of hours during specific numbers of days. It was a very like a micromanaged kind of opportunity. I hear all these things about you can't trust a remote worker. They're working three remote jobs. They're doing the bare minimum. They're doing, you know, so how does, can you trust a remote worker, or what kind of tools do you use to ensure they're doing their job, but not like breathing down the throat? I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense on where I'm going here, but I think there's a lot of companies that say, I'm not going to do a remote worker because I can't trust them to do the job right or well or work enough or whatever.
I mean, the answer is in the output. In today's world, we have so much technology to measure what people are doing, how they're doing it, and if it's impacting the bottom line in a positive way. So I would say, with all due respect, that's an archaic way of thinking.
Poppycock. That's what I say. No, Stuart, Kirsten's right. I mean, there's things like, you know, and by the way, companies like Salvo, they provide the reporting to the client. It's not like the client has to go out and do extra work or find extra ways to monitor and keep, you know, and keep track.
No.
I mean, there's reporting like ActiveTrack, which, you know, tracks over everything someone does, you know, on their computer. You know, there's listening to the phone calls. You know, look, if you have a good management team, even without micro managing, to Kirsten's point, productivity. I mean, everything, there could be a couple of conversations. Well, what happened this week? It looks like you're 30% less, 20% less. Look, if you've got a bad feeling in your stomach, start to, you know, examine what you're expecting. I mean, get in there and get, you know, get into some of the details. Stuart, I'm not arguing with you. There are folks, there are folks who have three jobs because they feel, oh, I'm working remote. No one's paying attention. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're not paying attention, that could be a problem. But if you do have your hand, if you have your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel in your organization, you know, that really shouldn't be a factor, but it is out there. There are candidates, there are employees who are looking to take advantage. That's a shame. But if a company really wants to hire top talent and, you know, bring them in, there's easy, simple ways, you know, to observe.
Yeah, I'm talking more along the lines of the employers say, I can never trust a remote worker. You know, I can never, they're not going to work as hard. They're not going to put in the hours. They're not going to do what I need them to do. To Kirsten's point, you know, just track the outcome, set them the goals, right? And measure it up against whether they're able to meet them or not.
And I would say, sorry, Kirsten, but I would say that is not zip code specific. In other words, there's great talent everywhere in Los Angeles, in New York, in Wisconsin, and there's great talent outside the U.S. I mean, from Canada, Mexico, you know, there is great talent and there's below par talent everywhere. And that really is on an individual basis. But from the attitude perspective, Stuart, yeah, I feel that people should be broadening their horizons, being more flexible with the kind of talent that they should at least consider and take a peek at.
Kirsten, you had something to say?
Yeah, just to expand, I was going to say inputs equal outputs. Those are measurable. And if you have well-trained leaders that are communicating and have a pulse as they should on their team and on their workers, if we have progressive discipline procedures, if we have measures to evaluate and control all of that, it's absolutely measurable. And dare I say, when there's no commute and no outside noise, remote workers can be even more productive than someone in the office. Mm-hmm.
So is AI really coming for our jobs?
For some of them, for sure. That is a fact of the matter.
So where is AI taking over? What are you guys seeing in the hiring world where AI is coming for people's jobs? And let's start there. Where is AI replacing real human people?
Customer service and marketing are two big areas that I see. Walter, what about you?
Yeah, agreed. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago in Houston, and I asked the official AI guy at Halliburton, big company. You know, I said, so my daughter is thinking about being a lawyer. What would you tell you? She's six. She's in high school. What would you tell her? He said, consider being a plumber. So, look, however, if you're an attorney, for example, and you are a corporate litigator, I mean, who knows what's going to happen one day? One day, maybe, who knows? But I don't see in the foreseeable future a corporate litigator is going to be taking the place, from an AI or a robot or anything like that. But a lot of the administrative work that attorneys do, a lot of the research, a lot of the forms and briefs that take tons and hours of research, AI is speeding all that up. There's a lot of administrative work that AI is going to make more efficient. But back to earlier in the conversation, guys, if a company is putting training in, and maybe don't wait for your employer to get you trained. If you're not at least reading a book, AI for Dummies, if you're not at least listening to some podcasts about AI taking my job, taking your job, how can I upskill myself, my team, my department, my company? Some people could get left behind, Stuart. It's certainly a possibility. But boy, I also believe that AI is opening up a lot of opportunities. It's going to also create a lot of jobs at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is an interesting point Anthony brought up is the trades, hence go be a plumber. The young generation, millennials, Gen Zs, have moved away from that. And you have a ton of the workforce, baby boomers, that inhabit most of those jobs in those industries. They're going to be retiring from their jobs. So we have a big gap in the job market and a big opportunity for younger folks to maybe evaluate some of those industries and jobs where 10 years ago, it was unheard of. So it's a very interesting shift. And that's a huge dichotomy between technology and, plumbing, construction, what have you. And to Walter's point, too, as workers, we have to be more resourceful and we have to close the learning gap because there is so much easy access to information. So if you're not doing that, it's definitely going to show when your peers are being resourceful and taking action to really level themselves up.
Walter,
And besides the fact that the rumor is that plumbers and electricians are going to be the new millionaires and all that. But one of the busiest parts of our business is we own two AI companies and we offer a free consultation to go into a business, examine their processes, their standard operating procedures, and to give it a lens from AI and make suggestions on this is how AI can improve in this area and that area. As you can probably imagine, Stuart, that is just, it's a booming side of our business.
Mm-hmm. You'd mentioned that AI is actually creating jobs. What kind of jobs?
Well, a lot of technology, a lot in technology. Remember, Remember, AI still is dependent upon the human input.
Right.
And there is not, it's not like, you know, just talking into Siri, hey, Siri, help me write a draft. It's literally just that alone, the input from humans giving the data, you know, to the AI, whether it's Claude, ChatGPT, you know, what have you, it is becoming a skill, an art form, and requires more and more expertise. But there's lots of other jobs that are going to be reliant on working with the AI, with this advanced technology, just like, yeah, Anthony, who's this Anthony guy? Man, this guy has some good some good points. But like the
I might know him.
Do you see the size of the data centers that are popping up?
Oh, right.
You know, I heard Mr. Wonderful just bought like 10,000 acres in Canada, you know, building these super data centers. I mean, these farms are creating hundreds and thousands or thousands of jobs, all having to do, you know, with the technology behind the AI.
Yeah.
Definitely changing the way that people do business. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Streamlining, but definitely not as doom and gloom as a lot of people say it is.
Agreed.
Totally.
So as we wrap up here on the Catalyst podcast, you know, I like talking to certain kinds of people who work in certain industries because you always have really great stories of things that you probably would just like blow your mind of things. And recruiters are one of those people because I'm sure you guys have talked to a lot of candidates over your time where you just look and you go, wait, are you being serious right now? I want to end on a high note. I would love to know if you guys have a story off the top of your head of just a funny candidate, something that just happened in your job where you go like, am I being punked right now? I'm just, you know, is there something that you just kind of want to share with everybody that just like, as we can end out the podcast here. And if anybody wants to put in their Q&A, now's the time to be able to do it. So Kirsten, Walter, Any funny anecdotes you want to share with us?
I mean, managing people, it's never a dull moment, of course, because the one certainty is we are unpredictable. Walter, you go first. Let me think of.
Yeah, sure. So
look,
I have a terrible memory, Stuart, but the only reason I got this one is because literally it happened yesterday. Okay. and this is just a, you know, inspect what you expect kind of a tip for your audience when interviewing candidates. You know, don't always take the answer and just move on to the next question. Think about what the, so I'm interviewing a developer, very, very, very smart, very, you know, his resume was way over my head. I'll be honest. You know, it was pages and pages of software I never heard of. But one of the requirements for this position was Microsoft Office. You know, it's basic, you know. Yeah. So I just asked him, hey, what's your experience with Microsoft Excel? And he said, you know, a 9 or a 10 out of 10. I'm like, fantastic. So, you know, just as a follow-up, and I'm not an expert with Excel, Stuart, but I just said, also, you know, what do you know about pivot tables? Always ask an open-ended question, no yes or no's in interviews. So what do you know about pivot tables? He looked at me like I had two heads and he said, well, you know, I sat next to the guy who was really good at Excel. So I'm not like, you know, that good at it. So, you know, I don't really know much about them, but I saw the guy next to me and he was really good with pivot tables. So just, you know, get in there and remember when people are in their interview, sometimes they embellish, let's just say, a little bit. So don't just take the answer, you know, for what it's worth. Dig in a little more.
Yeah. Asking the right questions and asking the right follow-ups.
Yeah.
That's right. Which we talk about a lot as a leadership team. I'm having so many visuals of the way some people show up to a video interview. And I interviewed this one young man and it was totally dark. Couldn't see his face. He was in the very back corner of some dark room wearing a huge, like, black puffy jacket. And the interview lasted about 15 minutes. Once we stopped talking, I felt like I needed to at least conduct some level of questioning, but there's no way that guy, I could take him seriously. So yeah. We abruptly ended that interview.
It just amazes me the amount of work that you put into applying for a job, the amount of time that you do this, and then you finally get this interview. You know how many people I know that are looking for jobs that would just die to be contacted back by somebody for an interview, and to like not take it serious like that? It just kind of is mind blowing.
No, or they should find it a t-shirt and a hat. This is a professional sales job. That's simply not appropriate, but it is good for some laughter after the fact.
All right. As we wrap up here, Kirsten, Regional Sales Director, Venture HR, if people wanted to find you, or wanted to reach out to you, how can they do that? What's the best way to reach out to you?
Yes, please. My profile is on the Long Beach Chamber. I'm happy to share my email here in the chat. And my team and I, like I said, we cover Long Beach and the surrounding areas. We offer complimentary HCM audits, human capital management, where we will dive into all your processes around your employee life cycle, from how you source the candidates to how they separate, and all of the costs contained in between, and put together a very detailed return on investment financial analysis so you can really understand where you might have some opportunities, some profit leaks, and how we can assist.
Wonderful. Walter?
You ready for this, Stuart? I know I've thrown a lot at you today. I got one more for you. You ready?
Bring it. Yeah.
I believe I'm the only Walter Sabrin on the planet.
You might be.
So I'm easy to find.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Same.
But, you know, I'm at Venture. Venture.com. You can get me through, you know, Kirsten. But the only Walter Sabrin on the planet, there's no excuse for not finding me. And if there's anyone out there in your audience who just wants to have a conversation on hiring, retention, they're scaling, you know, they're an entrepreneur just starting, they know how to make their widget, but they don't know the first thing about hiring. Boy, I will talk to them for free. I can, as you may be able to tell, I can geek out and talk about this. I'm really passionate. So no charge, no consultation fee, you know, in the very beginning. I want to see people get jobs, and I want to see people hiring people. I want to get America, the world back to work. You know, I want 0%. I know it's unrealistic, but I want everyone who wants a job to be working, you know, in some type of fruitful way. So, Stuart, I'm easy to find, but I can't thank you enough for this platform and just a chance to have a really fun conversation.
No, thank you guys for joining us. I hope everyone learned something new, or at least was able to say, you know what, that's me, or that's the company I work for. I need to do this, or this is how I need to you know, step up into, you know, these times, because they are changing. They're changing fast, and you don't want to be left behind.
So. Absolutely.
So thank you both for joining us today on The Catalyst. This is the Long Beach Area Chamber of Commerce podcast. I wanted to do this again, so we will definitely figure out what we can schedule. I know there's a lot of appetite out there. If anyone has questions, they want to have a deeper dive into anything HR, recruitment, talent related, you know, now's the time to let us know. But thank you guys for being with us today, and I can't wait for you guys to come back again.
Yeah, us too, Stuart. And benefits. We didn't even touch on that. That is a very hot topic right now that we can dive into too. So thanks for having us. Have a great day.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.